and welcome to Art Vox, a podcast with me, Rebecca Wilson, where I speak with various creatives from around Australia and overseas. Recently, the Mudgee Readers Festival had to be cancelled, which meant that I wasn't able to meet or listen to the writers I had been so looking forward to seeing at the festival. In an effort to mark the occasion, some of those authors have agreed to do a podcast with me instead, and I'm so glad to get the chance to have a chat with them. My next guest is the wonderful Sammy Bailey. Sammy is a natural history illustrator based in Armidale, New South Wales, who loves all things weird and wonderful. She finds beauty and importance in all animals, regardless of their appearance, and hopes to share her appreciation with others. Sam's first book was The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Ugly Animals, a title which I really love. It won the Children's Indie Book of the Year Award and the Australian Book Design Award for Younger Readers. It was a CBCA honour book and was shortlisted for an AVIA Book of the Year for Younger Children Award and longlisted for the ABA Booksellers' Choice 2020 Book of the Year Awards. Her second book, The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Dangerous Animals, was also shortlisted for a number of awards. Last year, she released A Curious Collection of Peculiar Creatures. And later this year, so in September, she'll release The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Peculiar Pairs in Nature.
Oh, welcome, Sammy, and thank you so much for chatting with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Congratulations, Sammy, on how much you've achieved and the wonderful recognition your beautiful and unique works have garnered. You really honour our animal friends. Can you talk about the passion you have for our furry, feathered and scaled friends that drives you to make these books?
Well, I definitely have a passion. I think that's a really mild way of stating it too, because sometimes I'm obsessed. But it's so hard to kind of put into words as to why I love all of these animals and why I, you know, have such a fascination with the unusual ones, I guess you could say, not just the typical, you know, top five that you see and hear all over the news or in books. But I just, ever since I was a kid, I've always kind of, I haven't been overly scared of different things when it comes to animals. You know, it's not like I would be terrified of dogs or cats or horses. And I grew up on a small property and near Port Macquarie, just on the outskirts. And my mum, she had horses. So we had, you know, normal size horses, and then we had miniature ponies and Shetlands, and we had donkeys, we had cows, we had camels that would live in the land next door to us sometimes, and we lived near the zoo. There was Billabong Koala Park, and once a cassowary escaped, and it arrived, luckily for us, at our neighbor's house, which is our opposite neighbor. And in the nighttime, he was coming home with his shopping and he was going inside his door and this huge bloody cassowary was standing there. And so they had to get him in, you know, and so all these weird things were happening at my house. And you don't often hear the animals from the zoo. And I think it just sort of definitely helped my love of unusual creatures. And I can only imagine that that's where it all came from.
Do you think that having that setting helps you to access, I guess, your imagination?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It definitely did for me. And I think that paired with my mum was an artist and she still is an artist. And so she would often paint these animals and we'd have bigger than life size portraits of cows and our dog up on the walls with big, you know, acrylic paintings. They were beautiful. And so they kind of decorated the house. And then my dad was musical, and so he'd be playing drums, and we're in this little, we called it the shack, and it's this, like, the little house near us. And so it was always creative things happening near us, and my sister and I just absolutely thrived off it, I think. And we were always reading as well, and I was reading often a stack of books at a time. I would have a chapter each before bed, and so my dreams are all insane as well. I am so thankful for that, because I think when you're a kid, you don't really recognize that or you don't really get to appreciate it. But when you're, you know, especially out of your teenage years and you're an adult, you can kind of look back and be thankful and really appreciative that I had such a great a great childhood and time with my family and friends, and I can really look back at it fondly.
Now, I've read that you completed a Bachelor of Natural History Illustration at Newcastle Uni. Mm-hmm. How do you think that has influenced you creatively, and was that course the inspiration for your encyclopedia series?
Well, pretty much, yes. And going back to the uniqueness of this degree, it is the definition of unique. You know, it is the only one in the Southern Hemisphere and at Newcastle University. And so it was, you know, it was such a rare degree that I think the fact that it was only 2 hours away from where I had been living and doing Year 12 was such a miracle when you really think about it, because this degree, I kept telling me, you know, my friends and family, this degree felt like it was structured and made for me, and I couldn't believe it. And you know, when you're going to uni and you have friends doing all of these different courses, and they're always coming and complaining like, I have to do this, or I don't like my lecturers, or you know, blah blah blah, and I don't think I ever complained, maybe once about, you know, being a bit stressed at how many paintings I had to do, but there was no, I never saw a negative of that course, and I couldn't believe how fantastic it was. So I'll explain briefly what it is for anyone who isn't aware.
Please do, yeah.
It is, so it's basically a mixture of art and science, and it is a blend of both of those worlds in the sense that you learn how to scientifically illustrate plants and animals, and that is the main kind of, the main aspect, but there are a lot of other things that you can do as well. So within that 3-year degree, I did a lot of design courses, and it was structured in, you know, a VizCom kind of way as well. I decided to structure it more around the graphic design kind of route. And so I did typography. I learned all how to use Photoshop and all the different editing and how to make infographic posters, all the while incorporating my illustrations that I was doing. So you would research, you know, a subject matter, whether it was an animal or plant. I also did medical illustrations, so I did an information poster on the spleen and rheumatoid arthritis. And so we would go over to the wet lab, and if you don't know what that is, it's quite, you know, intense. It's where they have the bodies who have been donated to science. And we would go over there, and we would say we wanted such and such body part, and they would have it prepared for us. And we would go there, and we would sketch it, and we would learn about it. You could sometimes take photos, and you really learn how to appreciate what was around you, whether it is, you know, the body or the earth, the planet, you know, nature. And we did so photography. I can't even comprehend how many things I did over the years. And so they taught us from scratch how to use, you know, gouache, acrylic, watercolors, graphite, everything you could imagine. And then they gave you the ability after, I believe it was after first or second year, to choose what you felt fit you most, and then you were to do your assignments and your tasks in your own way. We'd often have demos from the lecturers, and they would show us. We would sit there for hours watching them do this tiny intricate piece, and they would bring out hair dryers to make sure that everything, you know, dried nice and quick for us. And it was such a fantastic degree. I ended up doing a fourth year of honours. And it was mostly at the time, it was mostly because I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go. And I don't know how many people do honours because they don't want to leave. That's not something you want to pay, you know, however many thousands of dollars for because you like the degree. So I ended up doing that. And during that honours year, I did my first book, The Illustrated Encyclopedia of Ugly Animals, learning about these animals and the unusual creatures of the world on a scientific level was definitely something that made me think about doing art or doing anything with animals that were ugly and how that kind of led into the book.
That particular art form really links back, you know, to our ancestors, doesn't it? You know, like it's got...
Oh, yeah. Yes, 100%. And we definitely learn throughout the degree as well. It was really good because it is about the history side of natural history as well. So it's not just plants and animals. We're looking at, you know, humans in a lot of cases too. So we did many different courses on our Indigenous, you know, ancestors and Indigenous Australia and seeing how they shaped shaped Australia as it is and so many different things. And then we also looked at, you know, Europeans and how there was one man, I believe his name was Ferdinand Bauer, and I don't know if he had come to, or where this particular story, whether he came to Australia, where it was, but he was an illustrator and a scientific illustrator, and he's very, very good. And I believe that's his name. I could be wrong, but we'll have to double check. But he would go on these boats, and he would go to wherever he was going, and he would find, say, different animal specimens. And because when these animals die, if they were to take them back, they would die, especially things like crabs, you know, they're not going to survive. And so quite often when he's trying to document things, when they would be dead, the colours would be way off, so he could never really replicate it. So he developed this intense puzzle math number system to colour coordinate his drawings for when he went back. So he would draw these beautiful crabs, and that's the only one I can imagine at the moment, but he would then write numbers, I'm pretty sure, on different parts of the crab that would coincide with specific colours. And so then when he would go home, he would have all his watercolour equipment or his painting equipment, and then he would remember which colours were which, and he would paint them. And so they were these beautiful, vibrant, lifelike colours. And that, obviously before photos and anything like that. And it was this wonderful way of documenting what things looked like that I think made a massive turning point on so much, you know, what we do now.
I was wondering too whether you were always clear about becoming an author / illustrator, or did you end up there in a roundabout way? But it sounds like you were pretty clear.
Well, I was clear that I wanted to be an illustrator of some kind. The author part was definitely unexpected, but it's quite an interesting story, this one. So I was in my third year of uni, and we were doing like our body of work was on a theme of our choice. And so I had chosen wetlands, and we had to create, I think it was like seven pieces of art regarding this theme. And so we had to do like a portrait of something, a sculpture, a scientific plate, and some other bits and pieces. And so I chose wetlands, and some people chose, you know, different things. Some people chose the color red, and they would focus on all of these different things. And so I decided to focus on the ibis, or the bin chicken, as many people know it as. And I think it was around 2018, I believe. And it was kind of during that time where it was really popular and trendy to talk about bin chickens and how stinky they were and that they eat all our trash. And so I was kind of like, you know, it was in the peak. And so I started to think, you know, I wonder if they have an interesting backstory, and I wonder if this could be something interesting to look into, because a lot of the time they're just mocked and laughed at for being ugly and stupid. And I didn't really think that was fair. And so I remember looking into it and reading about how, you know, quite often they're seen in cityscapes, and that's where they annoy people most. And so I started to realize that their habitats are being destroyed and cleared, and, you know, places like Sydney, there's very little room now for wetland habitats. And so they were being pushed out, and their homes were being turned into car parks and buildings and cleared and into all of these horrible things. And they were forced to either die and pick a new place to be able to survive. And many different species within those wetland habitats didn't have that ability to come back and find food, utilize their long beaks for the bins, be able to reach down and get food, or they weren't that lucky. And so I think it's a really good, it's something we should be appreciating about these wonderful ibis and these birds, is that they were able to come back from, you know, a horrible fate. And it's not something that we should really purely mock them of for annoying us and stealing our food and being in the bins, because it's horrible. And so the more I started reading about that, I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, I need to share this with people. But as I didn't see myself as a writer and I'm doing this scientific illustration degree, I thought, well, what else better than to illustrate what I'm trying to say? And so I did this close-up portrait of an ibis's face and its beak and its head. And I really wanted to zoom in on the detail and the beauty of this wonderful bird. And, you know, beauty behind its scratched beak, its wrinkled head and its featherless kind of, you know, bald head as well. And I wanted to show that it really is a wonderful creature. And so I included that into my body of work, and it seemed to be, you know, able to change people's perspective a bit. And I was really impressed that I had that ability behind just a portrait of something. And so I entered that into a competition that the Australian Museum was running, and it was a scientific illustration scholarship, and I think it was under the title of the Scott Sisters, and who were these wonderful women who really paved the way for scientific illustrators, especially women scientific illustrators in Australia. And they were really shunned because they were women at that time. They weren't able to seek education. They were refused from many universities. And fortunately, their father was a man of many things, but he was also a scientist or entomologist. And so he really encouraged them to do what they wanted to do. And the sisters actually illustrated all of the wonderful moths and butterflies for his book that he had worked on. And so they created hundreds of these wonderful illustrations, and some of these details were so tiny. They used single-haired brushes to paint these intricate things. And they were just fantastic women who really changed the landscape for scientific illustrators in Australia. I think they were believed to be the first female scientific illustrators of Australia. And so it was just fantastic, and I lived not far away from where they had grown up and done all their wonderful illustrations. And so we got to go there for uni and study them. And so the fact that this scholarship at the Australian Museum was under their theme, and it was for men and women, but they had a focus on women illustrators, and it just all seemed to line up once again. And so I applied for it, and I entered the IBIS, of course, and a bit of blurb about, you know, why I entered the IBIS and why we should appreciate them. And I ended up being the co-winner. So myself and another lady from the same degree, actually, we ended up winning, and we got a bunch of different perks. We got some prize money. We got to volunteer at the museum. We got to see behind the scenes, all this fun stuff. And one of the benefits as well was they made some, that we were in the newspaper. I think it was the Sydney Morning Herald. And they did a story, and they kind of structured the article a bit more around myself, and they had a photo of me in there and I think a couple more of my artworks. And so it was just fate that the head of children's publishing was reading at Hachette, Australia, was reading the paper at the time, and she saw my article and she saw the illustration of the ibis and my talk about ugly animals and why we should appreciate them. And she contacted me and asked if I wanted to make a book on ugly animals. And thus the Illustrated Encyclopedia of Ugly Animals was born.
Would you like to talk a bit about your creative process? For example, do you try to paint a certain amount of every day, or do you just work on projects? What do you do? How do you approach it?
I definitely, especially after the first book, I started to realise that I need to function with a somewhat strict format. And so I definitely, the first year with the first, as in with the ugly animals, and it was all new to me. I didn't know what on earth I was doing. And it was all a lot of making mistakes, learning things the hard way as to, you know, how fast I need to do things or how slow. And because I was doing, for all of these books, except for this latest one, actually, they were all 60 illustrations. And I'm painting them with watercolor and white gouache, which is what I use for highlights. And so I'm painting these at around A3 size. And at the beginning of Ugly Animals, I was painting them so they were huge on A3 paper. So they would be spilling over the edge. You know, if it was a big portrait, it was going right to the edge. And then it got to about halfway or towards the end, and I was like, this is taking me around 3 days per illustration. I am needing to do my honors dissertation. I am needing to work a part-time job. I went to Borneo for 2 weeks and I'm needing to do all of the writing and all of the size comparisons and the line drawings, all of these things that I just had put out of my mind. And I was like, okay, I need to go smaller. And so I made it small so that now instead of 3 days, it was taking 2 days. And it did actually help a bit. And so I was really working to the wire. And for all of these books, I have really worked closely to that deadline. A few times I've had to extend the deadline, because when I'm working on these illustrations, I'm putting every bit of myself into them, and I'm working you know, I'm wanting to look, make them look as realistic as possible, and so I need to be putting a lot of time into them. And so quite often I will do, sometimes I will do the illustrations first, but I started to realize that I was actually learning more about the animal and I was illustrating it in a better way when I was doing the information first and writing about them. Because when I was researching these creatures, particularly dangerous and ugly animals, the important parts of those animals were a lot of their physical attributes. And so what makes them ugly, what makes them dangerous. And I wanted to make sure that my illustrations is highlighting that. And so sometimes if I were to do an illustration first and then I would do the information later, realizing, oh, it actually has a really important thing here that I didn't include in the illustration. So I started to do the writing more. And then when it came to research as well, I was really focusing, that was a really tricky part as well, because some of these animals have some unusual, they're very rare, you know, the blobfish lives down the bottom of the ocean and the Antarctic scale worm and things like that. And so it's quite hard to find a lot of information or find legit information. And trying to collate that into the different categories of each of the pages and making sure I had plenty of info on their diet, their habitat, you know, what made them ugly, you know, why are they using that for their benefit and all of these different things. So it was a massive task, and but something by the end of it, I really had a well-oiled wheel.
And what an amazing opportunity to be laying the foundation for like a truthful education. You know, they're finding out things in a really fun way that they really connect with. And I wonder, is that a bit of a goal for you too, to be educating people and hoping that you're influencing how they're viewing the world as they grow up?
Oh, 100%. That is probably the main goal of this book was to, I mean, my goal at the very beginning, before I knew that it would become quite as big as it did, was just to change one kid's mind, one adult's mind, just one person's mind on an animal, whether they now go, hey, that looks funny, that's an ugly bird, and then they stop and they go, oh, actually, you know, maybe that's just society's way of viewing this animal. There's no such thing as ugliness. It's just what we're deeming in the moment to suit our beauty standards or to judge something else. There's no reason to diss something when it's doing its absolute best. It's thriving in its ecosystem. It's doing exactly what it needs to, and we don't need to judge it on any other level and to find out. And I think as well, especially for kids to kind of sit there and to analyze or critically analyze an animal and think about why it might look the way it does or why it might have that ability is something that is fascinating. And often the kids in the class, I say, this animal has a huge beak, it has no feathers on its head, and it has this really unusual thing under its beak. Why do you think it is? Why do you think that it looks this way? And they come out with these fantastic ideas. And I'm like, you know, that very well could be something that comes out one day. Who knows, you know? And I tell them the reasons, and quite often they're right. But it helps them think about things and analyze all of this information and just think about stuff before putting their perspective out.
And for them understanding what these what nature's tricks are, like why they're there. Because in a way that mystery lures people in with that storytelling, I reckon.
Exactly, 100%. Couldn't have said it better. It's like the best mystery sci-fi novel, but it's real. And, you know, how exciting is that? These animals, they look like they should be from another planet. They have these abilities that should be from another planet, but they are real. They are here with us right now. We are living on the same planet at the same time. How lucky are we? Let's find out about them. Let's figure it out. It's exciting. And I think my aim is to just get kids and adults excited about what we have on the planet and to look after them before it's too late and to make sure they don't disappear.
That's beautiful, Sammy. Thank you so much for chatting with me today, Sammy, and I can't wait to see the illustrated encyclopedia of peculiar pairs in nature.
Thank you. I'm glad you did get that out. I'm still impressed.
You've been listening to Art Vox with Rebecca Wilson speaking to author and illustrator Sammy Bailey. You can find out more about Sammy through Instagram, Facebook, and her website online. And Just a note that the jingle at the beginning and the end of this podcast is thanks to freesound.org, and the music is from Nigel Nick's Mouth Music. Until next time, thanks for listening. Yeah, 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 yeah.